You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 513. My name is John Morgan, and Cole Coffee is not with me, but I believe I've got a little bit of an upgrade here this time around, because if you can't have the man that you normally host a podcast with, why not take the man that he turned to in the gym for guidance, for instruction, to understand the art of combat sports and fitness? Our boy Oscar Willis did as well. He coached him into a fight. It is Justin James. We've known each other for quite some time, and we've actually gotten to call some events lately together, which we'll talk about it, but this is the first time we're sitting here and doing this format.
Yeah, man, John, I really appreciate you having me. We've known each other for a long time. Not only have I coached Ken, not only have I coached Oscar, I coached someone you know even better than
coach
that.
Coach my kid.
I coached your kid for a long time.
One of my very
as well.
First coaches, obviously Extreme Couture, was a great place to start out in the educational process, and took him over to a syndicate to work with Roxanne Modafferi for a while, because obviously she's amazing with
incredible
children. Went to Drysdale's for a while to let him see what like a hardcore jiu-jitsu, like Zenith, you know, different level was like. And then right now, he's still trained to this day, right now at under Alex Davis, good friend of ours. So, yeah, man, you've been part of that journey as well. So it's good to hang out with you. So a lot to talk about, what we're doing, the world of MMA, all that. But first, I did just kind of want to talk to you about coaching those guys, coaching Cole Coffee, coaching Oscar Willis. I actually ended up getting to call Oscar's fight, of course, and Tough Enough. But what was it like for you, man, seeing those guys? And I don't know, I guess the challenge, I mean, I wonder, I mean, I know, like you said, you coach kids, you've coached at all levels, right?
Yeah.
You coach kids, you coach amateurs, you coach pros, you train with pros. What was that like, kind of being part of the Train Alta program and teaching just regular Joes? Like, what was your approach to it?
You know, it was really surreal in the sense because, you know, it's a lot of times civilians talk about, oh, I could do that,
right.
I could do that. And especially when I go back home to Richmond, Michigan, you know, and it's like, oh, you know, I could have done that if I wanted to. But, you know, the Alta program gave those guys a route, say, oh, you could do this? All right, let's do it. And guys like Ken and Oscar showed up and, you know, I'm blanking on her name. She's also a reporter. Oh, my gosh.
Was like, Amy Kaplan was there for a
Amy,
while, right?
Yeah, Amy was there. She was training. She trained her butt off for a while. And, you know, I developed a good relationship with Amy. Amy was so cool.
Right.
And Ken, oh, man, I love that guy. He's such a good guy. And then Oscar Willis, not only did I coach him, I got to corner him against a very tough upcoming guy, Jeremiah. Oscar got in there, did his thing, got hurt in
yeah.
the fight. You know, and that was the thing I really loved about Oscar's fight. It's we tried to match these guys dead even. You know, Oscar – and we told Oscar that ahead of time, like, you're not getting any cupcake walks. You know, we don't care what your background is. We know you're a superstar and all this, but we want you in a dogfight. And that's what he got in, man. And he got hurt. He hurt Jeremiah. It was an
yep.
incredible fight, man. And I couldn't be happier. And, you know, and Oscar's done bare knuckle, obviously, since then.
Yeah.
And, you know, anytime a guy can get in there and really, you know, talking about the sport is one thing, but to be able to get in there and do the sport that you talk about, especially from Oscar's 100%. Point, I just have so much respect for those guys that were showing up. And not to mention, training was at 6 a.m. Like, I hate waking up in the morning, and I'm not going to lie. Like, there were times where I'd wake up in the morning and be like, I'm punishing these mother effers because
– You told me this week.
I don't –
like, I'm not a morning. We're – you know, this is the MMA road show. This is the most road trip we've had in a while.
Yeah.
Like, we're actually caravanning back and forth yeah. between Columbia, Missouri, and right now we're in Little Rock, Arkansas, and we'll be back. And, yeah, and you're like, dude, like, we left out early this morning from Columbia, and you're like, bro, I'm not a morning person at all. So to know that you're not – now that I've seen it firsthand that you're not a morning person, knowing that you were getting up there at 6 a.m., you were taking it out on them.
I took it out on them more than I care to admit, to be honest, you know, and Sometimes I look back, I was like, maybe it was a little hard, but you know what? It was for their best. You know, Oscar was in there, able to show up, you know, and all the other guys. We had 20 guys under us, yeah, too. You know, Ken, Oscar, and Amy being kind of like the front
media
runners.
Reps, yeah, the media reps that everybody knew about. But yeah, there were some normal, just
civilians.
Well, civilians. I like it. Yeah.
And you know, it's like just to show, just, you know, Ken's like, you know, I just, man, I can't respect the guy enough because, again, talking about it and then be like, all right, I want to see what it's like.
Right.
You know, Ken didn't fight at the end of the season, which was fine, but he got in there and got to experience the training, yep, and experience the camaraderie and experience, like, the hard work, and I can't respect him enough for it.
What's the hardest part that you see when you talk about civilians? Because you're absolutely right. Like, I mean, we see it on the internet, right? Everybody knows how to fight. Everybody knows what you should have done. Everybody knows where. What's the hardest part that you see from civilians like that? Is it the conditioning aspect of it, or it is actually, like, when you start live sparring and stuff, and they're like, oh, I actually really don't like getting hit like I thought I would?
Well, it's not so much that, and this is, I'm going to kind of give you a curveball as an answer here. It's showing up. And when I say showing up, it's when we feel good. Like right now, I feel good. I feel healthy. I'm drinking coffee. My caffeine's buzzing. I want to go run through brick walls. But after a hard sparring session, a wrestling session, ooh, my shoulders tweak. My neck is sore. My legs hurt. I'm going to take off MMA. And that's the difference between, you know, MMA and say football or wrestling, or like a high school or college sports, is you have a coach there that's expecting you to be there. As a professional fighter, as an amateur fighter, you have to be self-motivated. And like I tell the guys, it's easy to show up. Like right now, John, we can go get our training session in. Let's hold mitts for me, man. Let's go.
Right.
But if I was tired and I didn't get enough sleep, I don't really want to train today. But guess what? You want to be that guy, you got to show up and train. Yeah. It doesn't matter how you feel. It doesn't matter that you didn't get good sleep last night. It doesn't matter that your neck hurts. It doesn't matter that you bruised your hand. You got to show up. And civilians, that's where they fall off, because MMA is a really easy sport. Anybody can do it. All you have to do is show up. But showing up is so hard.
That's a hard part of it.
And especially like early in my career, through my 20s, it was easy. But as I get older, I'm 35 now. I've had 78 MMA fights, 500 wrestling matches. You know, wrestled at high school collegiately, and I still compete in wrestling. Those are the hard days where I get up and my back is like, man, I'm going to take today off.
Right.
But you can't take those days off, and that's, you're losing an edge on your opponent.
It's really interesting, right, with MMA, because I wonder about this, and I didn't even think about going down this, but since you've been there, it's just, at the end of the day, right, when you're in an MMA gym, so now let's talk about it from a professional fighter standpoint, sure, right? You made it to the highest level. You're in a gym, and technically, like, you're paying the coaches. You know what I mean? Like, they work for you.
Yes.
But at the same time, like, do you kind of want them to hold you accountable as well? Like, if you miss a couple of practices, do you want them to get in your ear and be like, bro, where you been at? You know what I mean? Like, we need you here. Or are you kind of like, hey, bro, I'm paying your salary. I'll show up when I need to be here.
No, I really think that's what really is a good, dedicated coach. If I start missing a couple days, I'm expecting Dennis to call me. I'm expecting Roman to call me. And, you know, I'm pretty good about it. I mean, as my career, as I'm getting older, I'm getting a little less good about it, I should say. but I do have a great coaching staff. You know, Dennis Davis, I've been with Dennis since 2009. I've been with Roman since, like, 2017, 18. These guys hold me accountable. You know, I think later in my career, I think they hold me less accountable because I'm a grown-ass man. And, you know, right, it's like, you know, they're like, oh, I don't need to be in his ear. He's not a baby anymore. He already knows what he has to do. But when the coaches hold you accountable, when I get that call or that text, it just shows that they care. And when I know that someone cares about me, and even if I don't want to go to the gym, but, hey, you know what? Dennis is expecting to be there. And one of the old coaches I like to talk about is Robert Fallis.
Oh,
man,
legend,
I tell you,
man,
what, that guy – that's one of the things that separated him from all the coaching, is he held everybody accountable. If there was a class that I missed, he would walk up to me right to my face in front of everybody, didn't care. Hey, why weren't you at class? You said you were going to be at class. How are you going to expect to win this? How are you going to win this fight? How are you going to do this? How are you going to get your black belt? How are you going to get your brown belt? Why aren't you doing this, 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 this? And it would almost pressure you and make you feel like he was smothering you with all this things you're not doing right, and it makes your brain go, wow, 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 I need to be there when I need to be there. And yep, that's one thing Robert did better than any coach I have ever worked with, held everybody accountable.
I'm glad you bring up his name, man. Robert Fallis is a legend of the game, and I do hope that people remember. I think his time in MMA was right before it kind of got really, really big, and I think right before the coaches started getting really big. But anybody that crossed past him, including me, in the interactions I had with him in Las Vegas and on the road, I mean, the dude was just quality, class act. And it's so shocking. And it's just, you know, we want to keep this fun and talk about what's going on, but it's just, the Robert Follett story is one that makes you, because he was the guy that asked how you were doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was the guy that cared about you. Never once did I think, you know what, I should probably ask how he's doing. Sure. You know, it's like, oh, I'm good, man. Thanks for checking in on me. Yeah, no, I have these problems. You know what I mean? It's so, it was just such a terrible thing, but I'm glad you bring his name, because I don't think there's anybody that crossed paths with Robert Follett that doesn't have respect for him, and I hope that maybe people that don't know him can always remember his name and learn about him and always be a part of the sport.
Yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate to meet him early on in my career, and you know, I had a lot of great years with him. He cornered me in Bellator. I just have so many great memories with Robert, and he was just such a great guy. And the one thing that I'll always remember Robert for, that's something that I'm trying to translate into my coaching career, is hold my fighters accountable, and that's what Robert did.
Awesome, man. All right, well, listen, like I said, we're on a road trip. It's kind of fun. We got a chance to work some college wrestling together in December, about a month ago. We got to work Iowa, which, I mean, how cool was that? Yeah. I mean, the level that we got to see there was unbelievable, man. I readily admit this, even though we're, you know, calling CFFC Matchday on USC Fight Pass, I never pretend that I'm more about this college wrestling game than I am. Obviously, I've seen a lot of wrestling in my day, you know, through mixed martial arts. A little bit of collegiate wrestling over the time, but the focus is on MMA. But I'm still learning the game, which is why we rely on guys like you that are deep in the game that can help me out in the broadcast, and we can talk about it. And, man, I just – seeing the high level that you know, Iowa brings to the table, and then what we saw, a great duel last night between Missouri and Arizona State. You can check that out on USC Fight Pass. We're going to see another one. I just got back from touring the facility over at Little Rock. It's going to be fantastic. A lot of great college wrestling, but man, it's been a joy to have you along. Like I said, this is kind of old. This reminds me of like old school MMA, right? Because we were kind of looking at the travel, because basically we did Columbia last night. We're doing Little Rock tomorrow, and then we did Columbia again on Sunday. And we were trying to look at the travel, and there was like no direct flights, and it didn't make sense. So we were just like, why don't we just caravan together and we'll jump in? And honestly, today, first of all, you are the world champion of sleep. I mean, this dude, you were out from the minute we left Columbia, and you woke up literally as we were pulling up to the hotel, so you handled that pretty well. Jason Liederfein, the CEO of CFFC, he's a very safe driver. Mm-hmm. He's a very secure driver. You will get there intact. You might not get there quickly. He's not the fastest driver. You know what I mean? He's very much, I'm going the speed limit kind of guy, but, you know, you can feel safe, but kind of reminds me of like old school MMA. We're like caravanning back and forth, you know?
Yeah, it definitely does, especially early in my amateur career when I was fighting for King of the Cage. King of the Cage wouldn't pay for travel, essentially. They give us gas money, but driving from like Michigan to Wisconsin, Michigan to Illinois, I mean, when we drive to Lac du Flambeau, Wisconsin, I mean, we're talking about a 15-hour drive where it's me, my dad, you know, maybe one training, Darren Cruikshank, you know, early on, he's an old school UFC vet. We were college roommates, so we did a lot of traveling early on in our amateur career and our early pro career. But yeah, man, it's just, yeah, I love it, man.
It's fun.
The camaraderie, just being around the guys, you know, drinking a couple beers in the night, shooting the shit during the day, and just having a blast doing it.
It's nice. What was it about the Michigan scene that you guys up there had so many amateur fights? Anybody that came from up there, I feel like, had a ton of amateur fights.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people think that all these numbers are kind of like boasted a little bit, but they're really not. The thing with Michigan amateur MMA was there was no sanctioning. So there were times to where there'd be three shows or four shows in a month, and you can fight at every show. There was one time where I fought for Chaz Bowling, who arguably, and I want to say this publicly, that he is the biggest piece of trash I've ever come across. Chaz Bowling, I hope you hear this. You are a piece of trash.
Wow. But, wow. We're getting to the real stuff early.
Yeah, he's my former manager. Sued me for $30,000 after I got my bonus. He's just a worthless.
In the UFC?
Yes.
Oh,
he's a worthless piece of trash. But anyways, he had me come out for a tournament, and I fought twice in one night. Fought a really tough wrestler, Division I wrestler out of Central, and then another guy, I can't remember their names. But yeah, there were times you fight twice in a night. There were times where I fought Saturday, Thursday, Saturday. You know, I had 50 amateur fights. My goal was to get to 50 before I turned pro, and fortunately I was able to do that. But you look at guys like Daquan Townsend, he fought in the UFC. He had 40 amateur fights. Darren Cruikshank, you know, fought in the UFC, 30 amateur fights. Like Cody Stamann, I used to referee Cody Stamann's fights, because we grew up on the – Cody and I grew up on the amateur circuit together. I went to Olivet College. He was in Sparta, so we'd meet in the middle and train, or he'd come to Olivet and train. That's how me and Cody developed such a close relationship. Then him and Darren opened up Michigan Top Team in Michigan. Then Cody came out here for his UFC career. It was just really, there's no sanctioning. Like you, I remember Rocky Cantu, another college roommate, he had a gash above his eye, and they let him fight. Like, I mean, an open cut. And they're just like, go ahead, you're good. Like, what? Okay, no problem. It was just – so that's why in the Midwest, a lot – Ohio was the worst, because they had a really tough sanctioning. Indiana, early on, There was no sanctioning. You could knee in the head on the bottom, on the ground. I remember I finished – I didn't finish Johnny Hughes. Johnny Hughes is probably going to hear this. He's a fan of you. But, yeah, I go down to Indiana again for Chaz Bowling. Chaz the piece of crap bowling. And I'm going to say it every time. I hate this guy. And, yeah, like I'm in side position. I remember posting on Johnny's face and kneeing him in the head on the ground. Johnny didn't knock him out because he's as tough as a coffin nail. But yeah, I mean, it was just a wild time. We called it the Wild Wild West, man, and yeah, that's exactly what it was.
I love it, man. I still love those stories. I mean, obviously everybody's going now. You know, there's real money in the game, and of course everybody's trying to do this for a living. I mean, you do it because you're passionate about it, but then you get to a point where if it's going to be my job, I got to make money and I got to be able to pay my bills.
Sure.
But I don't know, man. There's something kind of cool and pure about those old days. Like, everybody was just kind of doing it because they loved it. Nobody really knew anything about the industry yet, and they were just kind of chasing a dream, you know?
And that's exactly right. You know, when we go to a show, you didn't do weigh-ins. You just said, hey, you guys look about the same size. And it's like, who's the tough – everyone just wanted to see who the toughest guy was. You know, we all had these little gyms around, and like right now it's the Conor McGregor era. Everyone wants to talk and run their mouth to a championship and run their mouth to make money. Back in those days, back when I was 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, oh, hey, there's fight Saturday. All right, you show up Saturday at 5 o'clock. All right, you guys are about the same weight. All right, you guys are going to fight. And that's how it was, and it was awesome.
That's crazy, man. Well, listen, like I said, we've gotten to work together on some college wrestling. We've got some more coming up. So I encourage everybody to tune in if you haven't watched college wrestling. I think you've seen it, and you've had a couple shows this now. We're trying to strike this balance where, like, we want to serve the hardcore audience. So if you're hardcore and you're tuning in, you just get to watch your wrestling. But if you're new, we'll try to educate you a little bit too. You know, how does the scoring work? What's going on? Why is this a point? Why is this not? So we're trying to do that. But your passion really shines through, man. So I will tell people, if you don't care to hear any more John Morgan's voice, that's fine. I get it. You hear my voice in a lot of places. But if you want to see the product, which obviously it looks great, our production team, they're phenomenal. They do a great job. But your passion really shines through, man. So I guess, I mean, is it just – Where does that come from? Like, why is it that you're still so committed? Because like you said, 500 wrestling matches, coaching. You know, I mean, you could get to a point where you're like, dude, I'm done with this. Like, I've had enough wrestling in my life. I'm tired of talking about it anymore. But when you're on the mic, man, your passion shines through.
You know, I really don't know. I'm going to be honest with you, John. Yeah. It's just it's natural. It's not something like, hey, I want to make sure I have high energy. It's just something happens in my heart, I guess. And then it's like, man, I got to yell. I got to scream. And it's funny that you say this because, you know, I coach high school wrestling right. as well. And in the last dual meet, like, our guys are – we're kind of getting beat up a little bit. And I'm on the mat, like, on my belly, trying to make eye contact with my guy that's got the big kid screaming at him, shouting at him what to do. And the parents are taking pictures and videos like, man, this guy's a lunatic. Like, why isn't this – you know, who is this? Because it's my first year.
Right.
So the parents don't necessarily know me. They just see this guy running around the mat, jumping up and down. Like, when it's a close match, we're in an overtime match, you'll see me jumping in the air, trying to grab the rafters, screaming, yelling. And, again, the parents think I'm a lunatic, but I really don't care what they think. I'm there to coach these kids and to show my passion in not just wrestling, but helping kids too, and, you know, helping them achieve your goals. So again, it's not just the wrestling. Well, when we're doing this, it is the wrestling.
Right.
But when it goes to high school, it's really my passion of helping these kids achieve their goals.
So, all right, I'll tell you a story first, and then I want to get to something else too, because you don't know this either. So you and I had worked together at Tough Enough, and obviously, like I said, we've known each other for a long time. And so we had an opportunity to fill in for those duels in St. Louis when we had Iowa. And we were looking for somebody, and I said, hey, I was like, you know, I'd never worked wrestling with you, but I knew your passion for wrestling, and I'd worked with you in MMA, and I was like, Justin fills the role. I was like, you know, maybe he's not the biggest name in the wrestling world. I was like, but I think if you give him a shot, you guys will like him a lot. And they were like, hey, you know what I mean? If you vouch for him, that's enough for us. Your word's good. Let's go for it. Let's give him a shot. So you came in, and it was funny. I swear to God, the opening match happened, and as you were just, like, calling, like, the opening sequence, the director gets in my ear. He's like, do you just want to take the rest of the night off? And I was like, I think I might. I might just take my headset down and set it down because you're taking over, man. So you've done a great job, and I'm enjoying it. And like I said, we've got two more to work this weekend, and I'm really looking forward to it. But what I wanted to ask you about, because this is such a theme, but I think it's a real theme, and I think it's a fair theme. I think anybody that's passionate about wrestling and talks about wrestling doesn't talk just about the sport and, like, wins and losses, and, you know, you could go all the way to the Olympics with this, or, hey, you know, this could be a base for mixed martial arts. It's more about, this will teach you to be a man.
Yeah.
This will teach you the lessons that you need in life that you can take. And it's that wrestler work ethic mentality that, honestly, man, growing up in Dallas, you know, there's more of a scene now. Obviously, our outstanding wrestler of the night last night from Missouri was from Allen, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas. So the scene is definitely growing. But I didn't see a lot of it when I was a kid, even as close as we were to Oklahoma. So I didn't see a lot of it. But now I see – I think – you know, I've had my kid training jiu-jitsu. I think kids need to train some kind of grappling, whatever it may be, but I just think that's so cool. And I think it does stand true, and I guess I'm sure you believe it too. Like, wrestling is not just about the sport itself. Like, it just teaches you these damn life lessons that will guide you for the rest of your life. If you can have that kind of work ethic, if you can have that kind of, like, there is no excuse. You were out there with the other person. It was one-on-one. There ain't no teammate to blame. You know what I mean? And it's literally just, like, not just aggression, but just confidence and instilling your will. I don't know, man. It just feels like there's so many valuable life lessons in the sport of wrestling, too.
You're absolutely right. You hit the nail right on the head here, John. I'm not just coaching wrestlers. I'm coaching the future. You know what I mean? The future of our country. You know, and at the end of the day, 5%, maybe even less of that, are actually going to wrestle in college. You know, so when you got a roster of, you know, 100 guys, maybe just a couple of them will decide to wrestle in college. You know, I wrestled in college, but you're absolutely right. You take the mentality of wrestling, that grit and the grind. It doesn't matter if you're running a podcast, if you're running, you know, my co-host on my podcast 107 runs a tutoring company. If you put your head down and grind, you will be successful. And wrestling teaches you that. Instead of like, oh, you know, well, blaming a mishap, like, you know, like when I've lost and when I lost in the UFC, it was like, oh, well, you know, it was the referee's fault, or I slipped, or this or that. No, we wrestle. Wrestlers hold themselves accountable for their victories and their defeats.
Right.
And that's one thing, you know, when you look at, like, football. I look at, you know, I'm a big Detroit Lions fan. I don't want to talk about it. I'll start crying.
It's a little too fresh right now.
But, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, it's because of Jared Goff. Are you kidding me? That's one player. You know, that's that loser mentality. You know, Jared Goff is going to sit and, you know, wonder what he could have done better, but it's a team effort. You know, when it's wrestling, it is you. It is you on the mat, and there's no excuses to make. And whether that's wrestling, whether it's at your job, whether you're starting a podcast, hold yourself accountable, and that's what wrestling teaches you.
Yeah. Where do you stand on, you know, obviously one of the things we're trying to do at CFSC Match Day is help the sport grow. Rob Hadak, our CEO, he was a former collegiate wrestler, former coach. He's passionate about it. He wants to help the sport grow. Where do you stand in terms of, like, the showmanship aspect of it, right? Because obviously one of the wrestling mentality thing is very much like shake hands, get off the mat, you know, you don't flex over your opponent, you don't do the, but you're starting to see a little bit more of that creep in. And I'm kind of halfway, because I do like the, like, blue collar get in mentality, like, you know, Detroit Lions fan Barry Sanders, right? Just hand the ball to the official and get out of the end zone.
Do you know why he did that?
Wasn't some of his dad told him?
That's exactly right.
His dad, right?
Yeah, yeah. His dad said, you don't do any of that flaunt stuff. You hand the ball to the referee, and that's what he always did his whole career.
For the rest of his life.
That's freaking awesome.
I'm going to tell you right now, going down a whole different rabbit hole, but as a kid, we're similar ages. Obviously, one of the great things about being a Cowboys fan like me or a Lions fan like you is you get to see your team play every Thanksgiving, right? Which is always a great tradition. But I'll tell you what, man, I used to love watching the early game when Barry was playing, dude, because we knew the Cowboys would come on, but the opportunity to watch Barry play. And I always used to think, and I know this is maybe a little bit of sacrilege because Emmitt Smith is revered by the Cowboys, but I always thought, bro, if we had Barry and that offensive line, like, he's running for 30,000 yards. That's hands down the greatest running back of all time.
Yeah, there's no question. His lateral movement, you know, his stop-and-go movement really wasn't – he wasn't super fast. He didn't run a 4.2, 4.3, 4.4, but his lateral movement is just – I mean, they used to say that he could run sideways as fast as he could run forward or back, you know, and that's just insane. And you watch his moves, and the way he moves his body, it almost – he looks like water, just like the way he would – form. And you know, they put a monument up in Detroit this past year of, you know, him doing his famous, like, where his body is like almost parallel to the ground, but he's still on his feet when he's leaned over, and it's just like, man,
amazing.
Normal people can't do that.
Amazing.
You know?
So where do you stand in that? Because now, again, I'm not talking about, like, the youth level, youth grappling tournaments, like, you know, somebody's crying, like, it's the hardest, it's the worst. So I'm not talking about, like, at the youth level, but I don't even know, maybe at the collegiate level. Like, I know there were some frustrated people before at match day when we had Campbell University against App State, one of their conference rivals, and Tay Gaudioli, the heavyweight, kind of celebrated over a guy, and, like, you know, the other team was very disappointed. But I don't know, like, I mean, combat sports, and again, I don't know where you draw the line, because like you said, it's not like there's a whole lot of lines to go to. It's not like there's a bunch of professional leagues. I know Claw is trying to do something. There's some things, but I don't know. I feel like there's a little bit of space for that. Like, again, not disrespect, because I think I love respect. Like, one of my favorite things, honestly, about MMA is that two guys go out there and they try to kick each other's ass, and then as soon as that final bell rings, they hug and say thank you. I'm like, that's dope, dude. Like, to do that. So I don't know. Where do you feel like? And again, not at the youth level, maybe not even at the high school level, but is a little bit of fun and showmanship okay, or do you think like no space in wrestling for that?
I tell you what, as the sport's evolving, now I was never big on it. I went out there, I raised my hand, and that was it. But you know, think about as the sport's evolving, we're trying to make it more popular. People want to see the excitement. They want to see guys excited after they win. Typically in my old day, you win a match, you shake hands, you throw your hands up, cool, you win, right. Move on to the next. It's kind of boring.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel with time, things are changing now, man. Sports are changing. And I am that old school guy to where shake hands, get my hand raised, walked off the mat. But as much as I'm not okay with it, I'm okay with it because yeah. I have to realize the sport's changing. We're trying to grow. We need to. There is an audience that wants to see this. They want to see those WWE per se antics to get it exciting. Maybe even a little trash talk before. You know, a little celebrating after.
Yep.
I do think there's a line. I'm not. It's
like
not
no
my style.
Like no taunting, basically. Like almost like an NFL thing, right? Like you can celebrate.
Yes,
but I don't want the pistol move in the face
or the throat slash, right?
I mean, like,
I it's entertainment, and yeah. You know, as we're growing as a sport, like the old school shake hand, get your hand raised, walked off. That's boring, man. But we can see a guy, man, shake his hand, throw his hands up, do a backflip, like yeah, like I mean, that guy's energy is gonna transfer to the crowd, and you're gonna hear it, and you're gonna see it. Again, wasn't my style. Still isn't my style, but I can see the younger guys coming in, and I'm totally okay with them doing it.
That's awesome, man. Well, hopefully you guys will tune in, give NCAA wrestling a try on UFC Fight Pass again. We've got Little Rock and Oregon State tomorrow night. We got Mark Munoz's kid. I don't know if he's going to go. He hasn't gone since the Cliff Keen in December, and so I don't know if he's going to go, but I hope he's – Chris Brennan's kid is actually there as well for Little Rock, so there's some MMA ties in there, so hopefully people will give it a shot. But let's talk some MMA, and then we'll talk some bare knuckle boxing as well. But we'll talk some MMA first. Okay. UFC 310. I like this, and I've heard a lot of people say this, and I agree. I like when the UFC doesn't follow immediately with a card right after a pay-per-view because you can keep talking about it because sure. It's like such big stories. You know how this thing just moves on. What was your biggest take out of 310 as we're a couple days later and you're remembering all? I mean, is it Yeah, I mean, I feel like Marab's a big story. There's still kind of controversy with Umar, the broken hand. You know, obviously the Islam scenario and Armin, that was frustrating as well. I did see, you know, we were busy, so I didn't have a chance. But I did see a clip from Renato Moicano's podcast where he said he made like a little over $950,000 for the fight. So not a bad payday. I know it didn't. I felt so bad. I like Moicano a lot. Like, he's been part of the CFSC family. I did respect the hell out of him for saying it's not one day's notice. It's a lifetime of notice. And I know that's kind of like some people took it as like kind of depressing or whatever. But like, that's a warrior's mentality. Like, bro, it's not one day. This is what I've been doing my whole life. So anyway, a lot of things to choose from. But for you, like, what still is most interesting to you or most, you know, the biggest storyline to you?
You know, the biggest there, I have two of them.
Yep.
And that's a Sarukian missing weight. You know what I mean? Oh, did I say missing weight? I meant back injury. All right. You know, this is the biggest thing right now. You know, listen, I made an incredible video about it. You know, I don't believe that he was injured.
On a growing YouTube channel.
Go check it out. 10-7 MMA guys on YouTube. Just getting over almost, we're over 700 subscribers. I've gained like two. After posting this video about Sarukian, I've had like 200 new subscribers
nice,
in the last week.
Nice.
So
just getting it started. I love it,
man. A little
man.
Traction, man. So.
All right. So you said it. You say you don't think he was injured. You think it was purely a weight miss.
Yeah, I really do. You know, he's had trouble making weight in the past. And when we talk about making weight in the past, we're talking about 156.0 pounds. All right. Now he has to make 155.0 pounds. And for those of you that don't know, a lot of guys are like, oh, well, it's only one more pound. Like, what's one more pound? One more pound is death. All right.
Yeah.
And let me tell you this. When I've missed weight by 0.2, 0.3 before, people are like, what do you mean you missed weight by 0.2? Like, how do you do that? It's like, listen, you feel how I feel and you get back in there. And,
yep.
and as a fighter, he was 6 pounds overweight on Thursday, he talked, which isn't really that much. But again, we don't know where he started.
Yeah.
You know, there's times where I'm 15 pounds overweight on Monday, and then I'm 5 pounds overweight the night before, and I can't get any more sweat going.
And we saw those photos on social media like a few weeks out. Like, it wasn't like it looked like he had a whole lot of like water weight to give.
This guy is, he's shredded. He looks almost like a bodybuilder, you know, of how lean he is. And here's the thing. If he goes in there and steps on the scale and misses weight, I don't think the fight's going to be called off, but he can't win the championship, and Dana White's going to be ticked off. And a lot of people are comparing this, and I think it's an unfair comparison. Charles Oliveira, when he missed weight, to Sarukian making weight. to this situation with Sarukian. It's uncomparable because Charles was the champ, and he has made championship weight before. And Charles, you know, and that's one thing. Man, I freaking love Charles Oliveira because, you know what, he showed up, he missed weight, he ate it on the chin, and he's moved on from it. He didn't try and make an excuse, and he could have. He could have made an excuse.
Because there was a lot of weird backstory with that. Like, there were people I know that were with him that were like, dude, he went and was still sweating in the hour. He peed during the hour. And you're telling me he peed and was still sweating and dropped no weight? So, but he never complained. Those were just things I heard from other people that were around him.
So absolutely. You're right. So it's the Sarukian thing, you know, and what really sold me on knowing he missed weight. And again, this is a theory, but it's a pretty educated guess, an educated theory. It's you look at Dana White's reaction, and that's everything. And, you know, I listened to a guy that I know. His name is John Morgan. He asked Dana White a question, and Dana's face said everything I needed to see. His answer was very bland. He knows something like when you're cutting weight in the UFC and you're in the hotel. You know, I was at Staybridge when I was, you know, for the Apex. Like, guys will come in, they're checking on you. Hey, how you doing? Hey, they want to see what you're doing. They want to see, are you in the bathtub? Are you holding mitts? Because I think it educates them, too, because there's so many different ways to cut weight, so they want to check on everybody. I think when they checked on him, they realized that he was struggling, and they went back to Dana White and told him the truth. And I firmly believe that he knew he was going to miss weight, and he was just making a back injury as an excuse.
I mean, well, all right. So, all right. This is interesting, right? Because you know me, even though I'm not really doing as much journalism anymore, now I'm doing more broadcasting, behind-the-scenes work, all that, I still have that long-time journalist background, right? And as a journalist, I can't speculate. I need facts. I need everything, right? You know, I have to do that. But you said it, an educated guess, right? And I will say this, that, like, do I believe that maybe he had a back injury that forced him to not be able to cut weight that he wanted to? You know what I mean? Like, there's those things can all tie in together, right? And then, you know, I've heard some people say, hey, look, even just the weight cut itself can cause issues with the back, you know, because obviously you're dehydrating and all those things. So they could all tie together. But I know exactly what you're saying because – again, I don't like to speculate. That's not where my base comes from. But if I'm just being honest, as a person who has sat in that press room and interviewed Dana thousands of times, the answer that he gave was very telling, right? Because I tend to believe exactly the way you do. And again, I'm not trying to – and I like Armin Sarukian. I was singing from the hills that, like, this dude is a much better challenge than people – than these odds seem to indicate, right?
Sure.
I think he's a great fighter. I think he's trying to handle it right. Like, he's not protesting. He's saying whatever. But it was very telling, right? Because if something had happened and, you know, they really felt like some freak injury had happened or something weird that was completely out of Armin's control, I feel like Dana would have said that. You know, like, guys, you know, this is unfortunate. You know, the guy did everything he could. He earned his way here. He slipped on a banana peel back here. Who could see this happening? We don't want to take that away from him. We'll let the man heal up. We'll get him you know what I mean? There was none of that. It was just like, I don't know, man.
And I want everyone to understand, I'm not throwing shade at Sarukian right now.
Right.
I think he's an incredible fighter.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm just going to say this the way it is. Making weight is tough. Like, that is the hardest thing any MMA fighter can do, and especially making a weight that he's never made before. And people need to understand that. Contender weight is 56, championship weight is 55. I don't think that's talked about enough.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. He might have been cutting weight and on pace to make 156 like he has before. But then when you realize you have a whole nother pound to go, man, it's – and again, I'm not throwing shade. The guy's an animal, and I know it looks like I'm throwing shade. And, dude, making weight is the hardest thing. It's way harder than the fight. When people say, oh, you know, once I make weight, my job's easy. I get to go in there and do everything I've been preparing my whole life for. But making weight every single time is hard. There's never been a time where I'm like, wow, this is easy.
That's crazy. All right, so you said there were two things about it. So that was number one. I mean, I guess to wrap that all up, how far do you think – I'm like, how long do you think it's going to take Islam to get another shot? Do you think – are we talking about multiple fights?
You mean Sarukian?
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Armin, how do you – multiple fights, like a long
time?
Man,
I mean, it could be – if he goes and knocks out, like, two top five contenders or, you know, say he goes against Justin Gaethje and sleeps Justin – I mean,
hard to argue.
Goes and beats Charles Oliveira, knocks out Charles Oliveira. It's going to be really hard to argue. But I think it's going to be at least 6 months.
You're right.
Even before it's talked about.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're 100% right. Like, he's got to make sure. And obviously, Danny Rubenstein, I believe, is his manager.
Yes.
You know, obviously, he's experienced. Danny gets the game. I think you're right. Like, you can't, like, if they come to you and be like, hey, number 14's available. You down for that? You got to be like,
No, like, it has to be top 10.
Yeah, I need top 3, top 4. You know what I mean? I need somebody right up there because I need to prove to you guys that sorry about what happened, but I want this title shot and I'm going to prove it. So,
and if he misses weight again,
oh.
He needs to go to the PFL And I'm not, again, not throwing shade. It's just that's where the money's going to be. He can't miss weight and expect to ever become a champion. He had his shot, and a lot of guys only get one shot, and Dana says it all the time. When you get your shot, you have to show up. And, hey, Manny Moicano showed up, man. Like, I know he lost. It didn't go. I mean, I think he was outclassed. I didn't see anywhere in the fight that he could win, but he showed up, man. And that's – how can you not respect the guy for that? He still showed up and did his best, and unfortunately for Saruki, and he wasn't given the opportunity.
Yeah, all right. So you said there were two things. I'm guessing something with Merab or in that performance or just – man, wait, what –
I tell you what, Merab is just an animal, and I knew he was tough, and you know, it's I remember what was one of the guys last night at dinner was talking about, hey, when you put guys side by side, Umar has better striking, he has better wrestling, he has better cardio, or he has better this, he has better that, and there's like 10 things, and then what does Merab have? Well, he's just going to get you tired,
yeah,
and it's like, that's all you need, and this guy just –
great equalizer.
He just keeps impressing me over and over and over, man. We're talking about the boogeyman. Umar was supposed to come in here 18-0, wipe out the division, and Merab – I mean, Merab is the greatest bantamweight of all time, and I just got done making a video of why. Look, he's beat everybody in the division, anybody who's anybody. He's beaten Peter Yan. He beat Sean O'Malley, Jose Aldo, Umar. Who else? I mean, we're talking all the top five
they're
guys.
All the big ones, yep.
And, you know, Davison Figueiredo, you know, people are like, well, he should be next. It's like, well, he's coming off a loss, and he's small. Like, he's unwarranted. Corey Sandhagen coming off a loss, unwarranted. We can't give a guy that's coming off a loss. Sean O'Malley, rematch. Nah, do you really want to see that? I want to see Sean go fight Peter Yan, and or you know, Peter Yan's on a two-fight win streak right now.
Right.
You know, how about Sean O'Malley fights Peter Yan, the winner gets Merab. But there's one name nobody's talking about.
What is it?
Mario Bautista.
Yeah,
he's ranked number 7. But let me tell you why I say Mario Bautista. He's ranked number 7 right now. Everybody in front of him is either coming off a loss or Merab has already beat him. Everybody. You can look it up. If
that's why I'm pulling up, because I vote in the UFC rankings, and I've never shown you this. I've shown a lot of people. So I do vote in the UFC rankings panel, but I am very – I need to see it. Like,
sure.
I can't remember. So I have this little spreadsheet where I keep their last 3 years of results, and I can see them side by side. And it just makes it – for me, it's so much easier because I'm like, oh, wait, but he beat him 2 years ago, and I got to do that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I'm looking at the list, too, and kind of seeing what you're saying. So continue on.
Yeah, Mario Bautista, you know, he's 9-2 in the UFC. He's beaten Jose Aldo. He beat Ricky Simon, who beat Merab by guillotine choke. All right.
Controversy, but still it's there.
Controversy, still win. Still is marked as a win. He's on a 7-fight win streak. Hasn't lost since 2021. He's a fresh face in the division. Nobody's talking about this. Nobody's talking about Mario Bautista. He's the only one in the top 10 that deserves it. Everybody else, again, is either coming off a loss. The only person that's not coming off a loss is Peter Yan,
that's
and he's 2-0. But Merab has already beat him.
Right.
So I want to see a new matchup. I don't want to see all these rinse, reuse, recycled matchups. Throw Bautista in there and see what he can do. Or give Bautista a top 5 guy and then throw him. Or, hey, how about Bautista versus Peter Yan and the winner gets Merab? I think that's the only thing that's warranted right now in the bantamweight division, because again,
like, Bautista's got to be involved in there somewhere. You're right. He's
absolutely
put in the work, and he needs that chance. And yeah, you get to this point. We see it a lot of times in divisions where you've got like these top 5, and they just kind of recycle, and you're like, guys, you got to give somebody a chance to get in there.
Sure.
So he's somebody that you got to give a chance. I mean,
who else though? Like,
it's either Yan or Bautista. Yan is the one that I think they're going to turn to marketability wise. Depends on where the location is, all those things, you know. But Bautista's not a bad shout, though.
I think it's a great one. Or, you know, again, Peter Yan's the only one coming off 2 wins. If you look at your sheet, like, you'll see all the other fighters are losing.
No, that's why I just scrolled through. You're absolutely right. It's one of those two names, I think.
And he's on a 7-fight win streak. And when if you're Mario Bautista, you got to think, what else do I have to do? I've beaten everybody they've put in front of me. And he's an incredible submission artist.
Yeah.
You know, and this with the incredible pace of Merab, maybe he can catch him in a submission. You know, we have to think of possibilities. It's not going to be a striker's delight. It's going to be a grappling match. You know, Bautista wins a lot of decisions. He wins a lot of submission fights. You know, we have to, you know, giving him Sean O'Malley, it's going to be the same thing. Sean's going to try to keep it on the feet, and he's not going to be able to.
Marketability-wise, I get it. Like, obviously, anytime you get Sean O'Malley in a big fight, you want to, right?
Sure.
But I agree with you. It's not the fight I kind of want to see right now. So,
and the Peter Yan, I'm a huge Peter Yan fan, and I don't mean to keep going back to it, but it's already happened. We already saw what the blueprint is. He shot 49 times, John. He had 49 takedown attempts.
Same.
Do you, like, he's shooting every – I broke it down. He's shooting every 30 seconds.
It's amazing. amazing. It's Marab's. So I've been a big Marab fan from the beginning. I just as a guy, I think he's cool. You know what I mean? And his UFC start was so weird, like a controversial split decision, the weird Ricky fight with the submission. It was a weird start, and you're like, this dude is definitely better than these two losses. And of course, it came through CFFC. So you know, I've just always been a big fan of his. But I just gotta think, like, obviously everybody talks about the pace, and it's amazing. Like, he breaks people. Like, you can see it. Like, people literally break. But I just think, too, from his perspective, like, can you imagine how free that must be to know, like, I can literally go 100% from the start, and I will never get tired. Like, I don't need to worry. Like, maybe I need to hold something back. You know what I mean? Like, you, like, at this point, as many times as he's done it, that's got to be so freeing to know I can literally do anything I want, and I don't have to worry about it.
You know, I tell you what, I couldn't imagine, man, because that's seriously one of my biggest fears in competition is getting tired, because I tell you what, there's no worse feeling than an MMA fight or a wrestling match when you look over and your opponent's not tired and you're gassing.
Yeah.
And one more notable name, he went Henry Cejudo, Olympic champion. He handled Henry in wrestling. Like, when I saw that matchup, I was like, okay, this is going to be the guy that gets him.
Find out.
Dude, nobody can beat Marab. There's doesn't matter what you are or who you think you are. Like, right now, he's the best bantamweight. In my opinion, he's the best bantamweight of all time. And Henry Cejudo's opinion as well.
That's amazing, man. It's incredible to talk. All right, listen, no fights to preview this weekend. As we said, a rare off week for the UFC. They'll be back next week, Saudi Arabia, and then the grind starts again. We'll have plenty of fights. So nothing to break down to get your opinion on, but maybe we'll do that in the future now that you're breaking down fights and all that stuff. We'll check in with you. Obviously, sure. You have some inside knowledge. Since we don't have any UFC fights to talk about, let's talk about bare knuckle boxing.
Yes, sir.
Saw the announcement has been made. You made the decision to take a bare knuckle fight up in Montana, correct?
Yes, sir.
Talk to me, I guess, about how it came together, what made you decide to do it. I know, like you said, man, combat sports has been a part of your life forever. But I still feel like bare knuckle, obviously on the eve of bare knuckle, knuckle mania this weekend, I feel like it's still got this thing where, like, even for people that have spent their whole lives in MMA and combat sports, it's still a little bit like, whew.
You know? Listen, I don't want to sit here and act like I'm tougher than anybody and I'm just Joe Tough. I'll be straight on the air. I'm scared. Yeah. Like, I'm not terrified.
Right.
I know, but I'm a lot more nervous about this than I am MMA fight. And, you know, I don't take easy matchups. You know, I had all tough matchups in the UFC since I've been out of the UFC. I fought all UFC vets. I fought a PFL vet and a one championship kickboxer. And now I'm going to fight a Bellator vet, Lloyd Mix, super stud, went to decision with Mike Chandler. We were talking about last night, one of your guys, I think Jay knows him really well.
Yep.
You know, he's a super tough dude, and we're going to get in there and we're going to go to Montana. How this all came together was I do commentary for Fusion Fight League. I'm commentating a fight. Lloyd was fighting Gage Saunders, and I'll be honest, I'm a little biased towards Gage. We've trained together, we're friends, we've, you know, hung out together. But Lloyd looked like trash. You know, he looked slow, he looked lethargic, he looked his age, and I always felt he was one step behind Gage in the fight. And I called the fight the way I saw it. I wasn't trying to be biased against Lloyd. I don't have a problem with Lloyd. Fast forward 3 weeks or 4 weeks, and Lloyd sees me in a crowd and he's drunk. And he calls me and he gets nose to nose with me. He's like, I don't like the way you commentated my fight and blah, blah, blah. And I thought him and I were going to fight right there. So I called the promoter over real quick. So if somebody throws a blow, like, I don't want to be blamed for it. And
smart.
So the promoter comes over here. I'm like, hey, we can handle this. So we originally talked about doing an MMA fight. I want to do it at 170 because I hate cutting weight. Go back to it. And Lloyd's like, oh, well, I'll only fight you at 155. I'm like, bro, like, we're old, man. Like, why? We don't need to cut weight anymore. I weigh 175 pounds. It's not like I'm 190 cutting to 170. Like, I'll step on the scale with my clothes on, 180, you know. And he kept making all these stipulations. So finally we made an agreement to do an MMA fight. 3 months out, all of a sudden he calls the promoter. He's like, oh, I hurt my back. And it's like, the fight's in 3 months. Like, what? So I felt he was kind of backpedaling a little bit. Reschedule. And so Terrell hits me up. He's like, you still want to do this? And I was like, yep. He goes, oh, well, Lloyd won't do it. Lloyd doesn't want to do MMA because he thinks you're just going to wrestle him. I'm like, dude, I have 2 takedown attempts in my last 15 fights. Like, I mean, I do have a college wrestling background,
right,
but I don't like to wrestle. For one, it's exhausting. And for two, the fans want to see blood and they want to see knockouts. And at the end of my career, when I was in the UFC, guys, if you guys you saw in my fights, like, I didn't shoot to take guys down. I honestly think had I shot to take guys down, I would have had a much longer and
probably
more fruitful career.
Yep.
But my ego gets in the way. So Lloyd's like, well, he won't do MMA. He'll only do bare knuckle. I said, okay, fine. I'll do bare knuckle, but it has to be at 160. There's no There's no negotiating. I'm not going to 55. I'm not cutting fucking 30 pounds to yeah. or 20 pounds to make 155.
Yep.
It came together, allegedly. Let's hope Floyd shows up. I'm really nervous, I'll be honest. I don't want to get my teeth knocked out.
Yep.
And it's I have great teeth. I never had braces. I have white teeth, and I'm going to have a double mouthpiece, Fortis mouthpiece, one of my sponsors. Big shout-out to Dave and Fortis. We're going to do a top and bottom mouthpiece because, again, I don't mind getting cut. I don't mind getting lumped up, but I don't want my teeth knocked out, man, and I'm terrified of that.
I think that's a very fair request. That's not a bad one. Yeah, that's the thing you see with bare knuckle. I guess the biggest thing you see about it is lacerations, cuts, they're going to happen. Like, yeah. It's just way easier. It's just you're going to see more blood. But, again, it's not – it may be a little bit visceral to look at from the outside if you're not used to it, but they're really not that bad. Like,
yeah.
The cuts and the damage isn't any worse. But yeah, that with the bare knuckles to the teeth, man, that's not a good thing.
I just think I have a good style for it. I mean, I'm gonna be like fighting, you know, with my arms around my mouth, kind of looking over, because again, hit me in my noggin. I have a really hard head. I think there's cement in my brain, so just don't hit me in the teeth, Floyd, please.
I think the other thing too is just accuracy of your punches, right? Yeah. Like, that's so big. Like, just you can't afford to break your hand, number one, because that's the only weapons you have, that you can't turn to the takedown at that point. No elbows, no knees, whatever. Like, that's your only weapon. And then with the bare hands, like, if you knock it off a forehead or a top of a head or something like that, like, it's really easy. You just have to be, I guess, really judicious with where you throw, right? You can't just go in there with reckless abandon.
That's exactly what I'm practicing right now, because I'm a power puncher, man. You know, I have my, you know, my 3-2, my 3 over, but I can't focus on those, because again, I don't have the gloves on. If I hit Lloyd in the top of the head or in the forehead, I'm going to break my hand. So what I'm focusing now is more placement and volume and speed, so taking off power. But unfortunately, like, taking off power, like, pop, pop. Like, you ever watch Zach Jusola fought in the PFL?
Yep.
That's how he is. He's touching – or Nate Diaz, for instance. He's not a power puncher, but I think Nate Diaz's style translates perfect to bare knuckle because he's that touch and go, touch and go, touch and go. He's taking it into later rounds, and I think, again, with that style. Now, with that being said, when you fatigue – you know, a lot of times it's like, man, I need to get out of here. Woof, big
yep.
throw. And so I'm, again, really focusing on my conditioning, focusing on placement of my shots, and not throwing 100% power.
First week of March, right?
March 7th, yes. Missoula, Montana.
Pay-per-view?
Fusion Fight League. It'll be on Spectation Sports.
Nice, awesome. We'll check it out, man. That's crazy. But you guys are crazy, man. That's why you're fighters.
It's just another check mark for me. Check mark UFC, check mark Bellator, check mark PFL, check mark bare knuckle fighting now. So, you know, if I get in there and I enjoy it, because I don't know if I'm going to like it or
yeah.
not. You know, I look up to Chad Mendez a lot.
Yeah.
He's a big hunter. He's, you know, obviously UFC
love
champion.
Chad Mendez, dude.
How can you not like
yep.
the guys?
Love that
he's
guy.
Awesome. But, you know, after I watched him in bare knuckle, he's like, this was complete chaos. This is not how I thought it was going to be. He wasn't sure if he was going to do it again. Obviously, he did do it again.
Yep.
But it's complete chaos. And when I hear someone that I look up to, like Chad Mendez, say something like that, that gets me a little nervous.
Yeah.
And I might get in there. I'll never back out. I'm not going to cower down. I'm going to fight. But after the fight, I might not like it.
Yep.
And if I do like it and I win, I already talked to Bare Knuckle. They're talking about doing a 64-man tournament this year. I think if I beat Lloyd, who's undefeated in Bare Knuckle, he's 3-0 in Bare Knuckle. Exactly. I should be seated above him and hopefully get a spot in there. And Oscar Willis told me that he'll make sure to help me
with
everything he can do to make sure if I win this fight that I.
He knows a guy over there.
Yeah, absolutely. He knows a couple guys.
You know, it's funny. Chad Mendez, obviously, legend, man. I love that guy. And you're right, his reaction. But I think, look, it's a very fair and honest reaction. I will say another guy. Now, Ben Rothwell has had insane success, and obviously as a heavyweight, things are a little bit different, right? I mean, he's throwing one punch and people are going away. But Ben Rothwell, another legend that I've loved forever, man, a great guy. And he has just sung the praises of it because he's like, look, man, the training is so much easier. He's like, you know, not that I'm not committed to it, not that I'm not training hard, but like all the grappling that just kills my knees, kills my back, you know, just makes it impossible. Like, that's the hard part of mixed martial arts, right? It's not, like you said earlier, like, making weight's the hard part. The training's the hard part. You know, I always joke, like, bro, if shit went down in a second in a bar and anybody on the UFC roster needed to clean it out, they would. You know what I mean? Because they can, but it's like all that grind of getting ready and the psychological side of it too. But as far as just the body as you get older, he sings the praises of it. And he's like, bro, I love this stuff because I can do it forever.
And you know, I'm really hoping that I fall into that category.
Yep.
And I just don't know. You know, where I'm at a point right now to where I might hate it, you know. And you know, fortunately, you know, Ben Rothwell, it's great that he says that, because Nate Pettit, you know, coach at Extreme Couture, always compares me to Ben Rothwell, says like he looks like he's my dad, you know, bald with the beard, drinking beer, slinging big punches. So if Ben liked it, I might like it too.
I can see that. Real quick, because we gotta head off to another point. We've got some production meetings and all that to get to. We'll be on the call Friday night, so we won't be able to see this. The Global Flight League, they're going to have their draft and everything. You're in the gym. Are people talking about this? I mean, I see a bunch of names being associated with it. Are guys in the gym asking questions or talking about it? Or?
You know, I see the GFL on social media all over the place, yep. But I'm not seeing – nobody in the gym's talking about it, at least out. You know, I don't really – you know, and I think the reason nobody's talking about it, at least at Extreme Couture, is Ray Seffo coaches at Extreme Couture, president of the PFL.
Yeah.
I think that's
kind
probably –
feel like
yeah.
a little bit of
exactly, you know, it's mostly everything in the gym's talked about is the PFL.
Yeah, and the other thing I could see too is even if you are all in, like let's say you know you've talked to GFL and you're a fighter and you're all in on it, you don't really know, right? It's kind of wait and see. Like, so I maybe you don't want to be out there being the first one being like, guys, follow me when
sure,
you're
sure,
like,
sure.
I don't know, they're like, I think it's gonna work. Yeah. So PFL is, I think I was look at that. So PFL, the Dubai card, the PFL, well, it's the
Road to Dubai.
Bellator. Road to Dubai, PFL with the Bellator title on. It's confusing. I know they're working to fix this.
Sure.
They're going to get over it. I think we'll probably get to watch it while we're driving back because it's on Saturday morning, so maybe we can throw that on in the car. Exciting for this one, man. I mean, they got some work to do. This whole merger of the two organizations, and obviously, man, I love Ray Seffo, longtime guy. I mean, we've crossed paths all the time, always great, asked about the kid. He's the man. But, I mean – we're not saying anything you wouldn't say to the guy's face, right?
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, PFL and Bellator, this merger, it's a little bit clunky right now. I think they're trying to move in the right direction. It looks like they're trying to make changes. But is it catching your eye? Are you paying attention to it? It's a little hard to follow sometimes with these morning fights, and, you know, sometimes their PR leaves a little bit to be – to be done, but are you into it? Are you excited to watch this one on Saturday?
I tell you what, I am excited about the PFL, and the reason I'm excited about the PFL is because they're not making the same sport brand as the UFC. They're trying to do their own thing, as you know, with the tournament format,
yep.
which I thought was incredible.
Yep.
I think there's things they could have sharpened up a little bit in the tournament format because, you know, as we talked yesterday, depending on, you know, if you go in there and, you get two easy fights, you know, who's the girl that we were talking about? I can't never remember.
Liz Carmouche got the tougher
path.
Yes. And then Dakota Sheva got the easier path, and it was clear that, like, not that they were disrespecting Liz, but this is their new hot, you know,
exactly.
commodity, so let's, you know, push her up.
So I think those things could be ironed out, but the idea, and then when they have, like, the live odds going on during the
yep.
cage, they have the stuff in the gloves that show you how fast you're throwing. I think they're really trying to make a new brand, and they're doing their best. Unfortunately, it's just not catching traction right away, but I do think with time it will. Like, Ray is very, very smart. He has incredible PR guys, and again, this is – They're going into new territory. They don't want to just do the exact same thing the UFC is doing and hope that their name can catch up. They are trying to do different things to attract attention of a new audience or a
yep.
different audience to try. And Ray will be straight up, we're not competing with the UFC. We're only competing with ourselves to get better and get better and get better. And that's what the PFL is doing right now.
100%. That's the way to look at it, man. So, well, listen, a lot going on. A lot for us. We're busy. We got stuff happening. So I will give everybody one last encouragement to check out CFFC Match Day this weekend on UFC Fight Pass if you can. Appreciate your time, brother.
We
got some good stuff to go handle. We'll go do that, but
sounds
appreciate
good.
You taking a few minutes and carving it out for me.
Always.
For everybody else out there, you know how it goes. Thanks for listening.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There was probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.